Are you happy with the state of politics? It's almost a cliche. We're not overly fond of politicians. We don't trust them. We think they're scheming, self-serving, somehow fundamentally dishonest, sort of like real estate agents, but with cheaper suits. Party memberships are in free fall. Leader dissatisfaction figures are consistently high. You only need to look at the annual survey that rates Australian professions. It's run by the Morgan Organisation. Nurses were on top. For 2014, 91% of Australians rate them as our most ethical and honest profession. Politicians, well, 12%, just under talkback radio announcers. While we might not trust our politicians, that's not to say we have no interest in politics, in policy or ideas. We do, and maybe more than ever. Interestingly, significantly, we have more and more ways of having conversations on those ideas outside of the traditional channels of mainstream party politics. So there's a disconnection there between our formal political culture and, well, us, the people that culture is supposed to serve and represent. So there's a question to ponder. What do we want from politics? Where's it going wrong? What might we change? We're going to talk about that now with Mark Evans. He's director of the Institute for Governance at the University of Canberra, and with Dr. Rebecca Huntley. She's a social researcher. Welcome to both of you.
Hi.
Thank you.
Rebecca, instinctively, we feel this disconnection, but there's more to it than instinct, than that gut feel.
It's no doubt that we're in a time of real difficulty for political leaders. There's greater scrutiny by the media. There's enormous problems facing the nation. And in some ways, because we live in such a global economy, there are so many things that our national politicians can't really do to improve the situation. They don't, we use that Keating phrase, they don't necessarily have that many levers to push. Mm.
No, it's an International Women's Day treat, you see.
That's right.
And do you think the expectations are unreasonable and unreal from many of the voters watching that process?
I think one of the things that, you know, this combination of high expectations and deep cynicism, one of the ways that manifests itself in the discussions that I observe is that Australians are, you know, nostalgic for leaders of the past. They talk about, you know, the great Gough Whitlam, Paul Keating, Menzies, and at the moment, John Howard. They look back and they say, you know, those were great leaders. They did X, Y, and Z. Ironically, leaders that they may not have particularly liked when they were actually leading the country. So there's nostalgia for leaders of the past. And there's also this kind of, what I call this kind of Prince Charming rescue fantasy that some leader in waiting is going to be. But at the moment, that's all about Malcolm Turnbull. If Malcolm Turnbull becomes Prime Minister, it'll all be okay. Of course, it's a really difficult thing for the new leader to live up to. The moment they start making some mistakes, people throw their hands up and say, oh, it's another terrible leader.
That's almost an emotional response to this. I mean, I suspect that in the nostalgia for a Keating or a Whitlam, it's not around the detail of their program or the facts of what happened in that period of government. It's more of a more misty emotional sense of what took place then.
There is something emotional. There's also a degree of amnesia. I mean, when people talk about Whitlam, they also forget that he wasn't re-elected, even after he was, you know, deposed quite, you know, thrown out of the prime ministership in quite an extreme way. And the nostalgia and excitement for Keating is hilarious. I mean, the man was never popular, even when he was re-elected. Even the only election that he won, the 1993 election, he won on a very small margin, and primarily because of the GST, because people didn't want it. So I think there is this kind of sense. But what is a really common in the nostalgia for the leaders of the past is this sense that they did things that were unpopular because they thought they were right. So the policy, when people do talk about policies, the policies that they identify are ones that they think, oh, you know, they got a lot of resistance, but in the end it turned out to be a good decision. At the moment, there's this sense that politicians only do things if they're popular, or with the current government, things that are wildly unpopular, and too many things that are wildly unpopular, so they're not listening to us. They're either listening to us too much, you know, pandering to us, or they're not listening enough.
So Mark, there's a paradox in that. There's the nostalgia, but this want on the part of people to have politics take the issues of the country seriously, but then the want of politics for it to be taken in good favour with the voters to maintain its popularity, a hard thing to do when you're taking tough decisions.
I think also there's a almost like a Jekyll and Hyde dimension to this, that that citizens see politicians during election campaigns exhibiting all the characteristics of leadership that they want to see. They listen to them. They seek to align their interests with their interests. They seek legitimacy. They seek conversations. But then once in power, they take on a different personality. They become part of the political machine. And they join an adversarial battle. And they go through this process, not all of them, but a lot of them, of disconnection from the citizens that they purport to represent. So I don't think it's that they don't necessarily have the qualities of leadership that are necessary, but they park them when they get into power, and they return to them quite often when they're in opposition.
Which is a curious thing, because those qualities that they park are the things that clearly people want from them, but that make them popular. To then push that aside during the period in government when you're not obviously campaigning would seem to be self-defeating.
Absolutely. We've termed this the magic kingdom effect in our research, that politicians come to Canberra to do battle. They are basically interested in game playing. They're interested in maximising their own self-interest, both in relation to their parties, but also to their individual careers. In many ways, they leave behind the search for public value, which is basically what Australians want to see. They want to basically see them take the issues that matter most to them seriously.
What do we want from politics? We're asking Mark Evans and Rebecca Huntley here on Sunday Extra. Rebecca, does that ring true, that disconnection between the gritty realities of adversarial political life and our desire for outcomes, for conversation, for being taken seriously?
Absolutely. And Australians instinctively know that we are not a culture of, you know, despite the fact we occasionally have these figures that get thrown up who might be extreme left or extreme right in their view, we're basically we're a very, very stable democracy. And on many issues, there's a perception that the two parties agree. So one of the biggest complaints people make is they're pretending to disagree on everything in Parliament in question time, and, you know, to shoot down every idea that the other side has, except potentially on some foreign affairs issues, interestingly. Mm. But on domestic issues, they're constantly pretending that they're absolutely at odds, where there must be some common ground. So that's a frustration. And that's when people say, look, the magic kingdom, you know, the adversarial fight, the gladiatorial aspect of politics is taking over the kind of smart conversations that we should be having. I think that the thing that is most worrying Australians at the moment, you know, if I was to pick one big issue, is that neither side of politics, well, there's lots of sides of politics, but neither of the major parties are able to paint an inspirational but realistic picture of what our society and our economy is going to look like in the next 10 to 15 years. And
I think
in this clash and this constant disagreement, they wonder whether there isn't a common ground between the two major parties, who at the moment are really the only two parties that are going to form government anytime soon, about what that could be.
Mark, you had a point there?
Yeah, look, I think that's an enormously important point. And I think, the three-year electoral cycle doesn't help matters. Because a lot of the big problems that we're dealing with, or the wicked problems, like political scientists like to call them, are long-term. They require co-produced solutions with citizens and stakeholders. And the three-year electoral cycle creates this pathology of the short term, which is heightened by the 24/7 media cycle. So actually the media have a fundamental role to play in this as well. So therefore politicians stay focused on responding to short-term expedience rather than dealing with those more difficult, intractable problems that we really need to confront if we're going to be to continue to be a prosperous economy in the rest of the 21st century.
And increasingly, Rebecca Huntley, there are two conversations. There's the one that things like social media, the internet, the sudden availability of both information and contact, the conversation that that makes available to the public, set against that purely inner circle political media conversation, which seems malnourished by comparison. How do we reconcile those two worlds?
It has both a lot of potential for greater, you know, an enhanced democracy, enhanced public conversation. But one of the problems, and this is identified by people in our groups, is that because we're constantly consuming little bits of information, whether we're just checking the local news sites for the headlines or looking at Facebook or Twitter or all that stuff, it's almost cut up issues into tiny increments. And, you know, so we're getting little bits of information all the time. And a lot of people do say, when is the time to step back and think about that larger long-term conversation, that larger long-term issue? And I understand why politicians are in a terrible bind having to respond to, you know, some wayward tweet or, you know, some headline that's just, or some tiny bit of, and sometimes political minutia that they've got to respond to.
And yet the opportunity there, Mark, for political parties in particular, which have sort of lost contact with the public, their memberships are at an all-time low, there's that sense of the hollowness of political institutions, there's the capacity for new technologies to find very new and immediate ways for those organisations to connect with the grassroots.
I mean, there are immense opportunities through digitalisation to have really quite developed and sophisticated conversations about different political futures in a way that's never existed before. And political parties in general, particularly in Australia, and I have to say that anti-politics and the problem of the poverty of communication of political parties isn't peculiar, of course, to Australia. It's a problem that has cadences throughout Europe as well. Obama, obviously in the United States, has taken digitalization much more seriously as a way of personalizing politics directly to the citizen. But crucially in Australia, the major problem is that political parties aren't communicating, particularly with the younger generations. And in fact, many politicians have stigmatized the younger generations as not being interested in politics. And the evidence flies in the face of that. They're not interested in participating through the politics that's played out in the Magic Kingdom. They're interested in politics and doing politics in a different way.
That's an important distinction, isn't it, Rebecca Huntley? That thing of doing politics in a different way, that there is the interest, it's just not an interest in politics as we currently structure it.
I started my research career almost 10 years ago, researching young Australians, you know, what's not very usefully described as Generation Y. And one of the things I wanted to investigate was, you know, are they, you know, politically apathetic and disconnected? I mean, my generation was accused of the same thing. Mm. And I found, you know, the opposite. They kind of thought that the theatre of partisan politics, especially in Australia, was completely incapable of encompassing the larger political questions that face them, some of which were questions of global inequality and so forth, issues around climate change, the gap between rich and poor. They saw they had a very international perspective on politics, and they wondered what domestic politics had to do with that. But they were very, very interested. They just questioned whether, if they really wanted to, you know, if they really were set on changing the world, whether the political parties were the right way to go about it.
We need to get our politics perhaps on the one page from both the professional political class and those of us who wish to be served by it. Look, thanks to both for that conversation this morning, and thanks to the young Huntleys who remain placid for the bulk of this conversation. Mark Evans has joined you. He's director of the Institute for Governance at the University of Canberra, and Dr. Rebecca Huntley, social researcher. This is Sunday Extra here on RN.